The All About Nothing podcast may have language and content
that isn't appropriate for some.
Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, Nothingers, to the All About Nothing podcast. This is episode number 248. I am Barrett Gruber, and I am co-hostless to stay today because, I can't give out a whole lot of information because I don't know at this point, by the time this episode drops, what it is that Zach has actually put out there in public. But as most of you know, his wife was pregnant with twins. And I don't want to give it all away without any details, but I'll just say they had two babies. So he is on paternity leave until he returns. My replacement, Bill, or his replacement, Bill, is not here because Bill's sister is also giving birth. So we will have Bill back soon. Please subscribe and share the show. That's how we get new listeners. Also, please consider supporting the show financially by visiting theallaboutnothing.com and becoming an official member and proudly calling yourself a true nothinger. We will have more details on that at the end of the show. And if you can't do that, please give us a 5-star review, a like, and follow us across social media. You can find links at theallaboutnothing.com. Want you to make sure to check out ZJZ Designs, whether you're looking for a perfect graphic tee to show off your style or something unique to wear on any occasion, ZJZ Designs has you covered. From bold designs to creative prints, they offer a range of apparel that's all about making a statement. And if you love standing out in a crowd, check out their collection today, ZJZDesigns.com. Trust me, you don't want to miss what they have in store. ZJZ Designs, it's where fashion meets fun, no matter the season. Big thanks to Mr. Donald Brock Jr., coordinator of the 2025 Soda City Comic Con, the 2025 Coastal Comic Con, and the 2025 Boardwalk Comic Con in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. The 2025 Soda City Comic Con is coming up August 23rd and 24th at the Columbia Metropolitan Convention Center. Details can be found by visiting SodaCity.com, SodaCityComicCon.com. Also, go back and listen to episode number 247 because Brock made a huge guest announcement that we're very excited about. And I would tell you at the beginning of this, but then what's the incentive to go back and listen? Also, the 2025 Boardwalk Comic Con will be on October 4th and 5th at the Myrtle Beach Convention Center. You can find details at BoardwalkComicCon.com. We'll have more details on that as the event gets closer. So check the show notes for that. All right. All of the business being out of the way, I want to welcome to the show Mr. Luke Basso. Luke, we had the honor of meeting at the Coastal Comic Con in Wilmington, North Carolina, just a few weeks ago. And honestly, very intrigued and right at the get-go because actually one of our friends that was there at the Comic Con immediately looked you up after they saw your card and was like, he's got more followers than you do. And I was like, a lot of people have more followers than we do. But regardless, I was very intrigued by your story. So Luke is in Wilmington, lives in Wilmington, North Carolina. He is a college student in Wilmington and has an extremely interesting background in how he became more popular than me. Luke, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a YouTuber. My channel is called Filmperia, and I interview veterans and historic witnesses from World War II to the modern day to preserve their stories. I've had about, I want to say, 80 to 85 interviews from all points of history, well, firsthand accounts of points of history, and too many documentaries of two World War II veterans I know. I've been doing this since I was 15 years old, since I lived in upstate New York, and I'm continuing to do this as much as I possibly can.
Yeah. And checking out your page, I must have watched 15 or 20 videos of interviews that you did with veterans. And what was, first of all, just from a film aspect, from the production value, fantastic. You said you started doing this when you were 15 years old. What was your inspiration behind starting this whole project, which basically is become like a lifestyle? What was your inspiration?
Well, I've always liked history, especially military and political history growing up. And how the channel itself got started was, I have to go back to during COVID, there's this World War II veteran named Doug Brown. He was turning 100 years old. There was a celebration and a parade happening for him. I attended the parade and celebration for his upcoming 100th birthday. And I asked the family, hey, can I meet him? And it's like, oh, yeah, sure. I met him briefly. And it's like, well, if you want to come back tomorrow, we can actually talk to him and sit down. So I came back the next day. There's two cameras set up. And they recorded a whole conversation for about 2 hours. And I thought, why don't I do the same thing? I know a lot of veterans and I like history. and I like making videos. So why not combine that all? And it started out, my very first video I uploaded was one of my friends, Dr. John Southwick. He was a former army doctor in Germany during the Cold War. But the very first interview I actually did, I just didn't get a chance to upload it. All my videos are not in order of uploading just because of time and sake, but people ask me, what's your very first interview you did? So it's confusing. But the first interview I did was with my friend, Tony Gagliardi. He's passed away recently, but he was at Iwo Jima in Okinawa, and he was also the first mini documentary I did. And sorry, what was your question?
Just your inspiration. Like, what was it?
Yeah, just always liking history and military history and knowing a lot of veterans. And I got started through that World War II veteran, Doug Brown. I interviewed the interview, what him and I did for that 2-hour conversation with the family recorded. That was not part of my channel, but that got me started with with the idea of my channel. And about 2 years later, I interviewed him like officially for my channel. And at that point I knew what I was doing, and he was 102 then. I don't know if he's still alive or not.
Goodness.
I think he is, because I haven't heard he passed away. So he'll be 105 this year if he is still alive.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Did you have any sort of background in journalism or like from earlier before? Did you have any like filmmaking? Was that something you were interested in even like before the age of 15?
No, just making videos, really. I made a few videos before and made videos with my friends, but no real experience. Not at all. Just one thing led to another, and here I am now.
Yeah. It's extremely intriguing, you know, because I have a lot of friends that are either currently active military or are on the verge of retirement, having served either in Iraq or Afghanistan. Like they have been in war situations over the last 20 years between those two wars, and they have either retired or are on the verge of retiring, and they're like my age, and I just turned 46, so it's interesting hearing their stories and then also seeing the interviews that you conducted where their stories are different from a technological standpoint, but just the battles that they fought in. Afghanistan is absolutely an extremely unique environment when it comes to having to fight a ground war from the perspective of, you know, it's extremely mountainous, roads going in and out. And when they were fighting ISIS in Iraq, and then they were fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan, it was the driving on what was an established road became a trap. You know, there were so many different situations, and I've heard several different stories that they've told just on what would have been considered just a routine assignment to go out and retrieve something and bring it back to the base. How did you develop the skills to conduct the interviews and create these, basically these mini documentaries that you've created on your YouTube page?
Well, I've only had two mini documentaries just because they take too long to make.
Sure. They're really good. They are really good.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Just mixing old war footage, music, and their experience from their point of view, and combining all together, we get a around 15, 20 minute documentary about their World War II experience. The first one was, I mentioned, Tony, who was in the Navy during Iwo Jima in Okinawa. And then another one is John Agia, who was in the Western Front during World War II. He was in France and Germany. And that was an originally emotional interview. He was crying through the interview, and he goes into detail how graphic the battles he took part of. It was a really emotional interview, and I'd say that probably is my most emotional one. He was crying, and he remembers it as it was yesterday. And after 80 years, it still haunts him to this day.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things about the stories that I like I said, even my friends that are of retirement age from the military, is just the experiences that they went through, the people that they were in units with that they lost, or the scars of the battles they were in. They continue to through everything, they relive these situations, and to go and have that documented, I think would be such an honor for them. The service that you're doing, not only just for them as individuals, but for veterans, as a whole, is I'm inspired by it. I, you know, our podcast, we did a sit down interview with two veterans of the Iraqi war and Afghanistan, as well as this was several years ago. This was actually just after things finally got settled. I want to say it was 2022. But we did a 4th of July episode to honor veterans. And we also had a therapist that, that did therapy for veterans out of the university here at South Carolina. And so it was an interesting conversation to have between the two of them, who were not in the same unit, but did have very similar stories and very similar losses and things like that. And then the perspective of a therapist from a post-war, the veteran side of it, to be able to give an idea of how she helps those veterans work through those things. What's been some of the most powerful or emotional stories that you've heard from your interviews?
Well, our Vietnam veterans, they never really got a welcome home. A lot of them were spat on or called baby killer or beaten up. And with Vietnam, getting Vietnam veterans to talk, which I understand 100% why it's harder for them, but getting them to open up is really emotional. This is the first time they ever talked about it a lot publicly after 50 years. They're shamed after they came home for a, it was just, you can, just the way they talk and the way they describe it. And you can tell just how, different it was than, these World War II veterans or, let's say war in Iraq veterans. These Vietnam veterans, a lot of them got Agent Orange. A lot of them, some of them became homeless. I haven't interviewed any homeless veterans, but I've met a lot of homeless veterans, veterans who were homeless. Vietnam was way different. Not just the warfare. There's a lot of politics involved. There was the home front, like I mentioned, when they came home, and a lot of them are hesitant that when I say, "Do you want to talk about your time in Vietnam?" For historical reasons, they understand why I'm doing it. They just don't want to, which I understand completely. But most of World War II guys, they say yes. Almost all of them say yes. Along with other veterans, the more recent veterans I get, they say no because it's so recent. But Vietnam veterans are always the one that not almost all of them, but I'd say about half the ones I meet say no, which I understand completely why.
Yeah.
So it's really emotional hearing when I talk to them, like let's say I meet one at like at a restaurant or something, or if I run into one just doing my daily thing and talking to them and. Saying welcome home to them means the world to them because I never got that. Yeah.
Do you have any, what is your approach to making that initial contact with a veteran, whether it's Vietnam or World War II or Iraq or Afghanistan? How do you go about the process of actually like finding a veteran or reaching out to someone to have their story documented?
When I first started, it was really hard. I didn't know where to start. I just started with the veterans I knew, and I didn't know. I just asked everyone, "Hey, do you know anyone I can interview?" And then some of them would say yes, a lot of them would say no. Then I started reaching out to VFW and American Legions, which helped me a lot. Is all the media attention I got, and the veterans and their families started reaching out to me, saying, "Hey, my husband was in Vietnam, and I think he's ready to talk." Or he won't talk to me. Maybe you can convince him to talk to you instead. And that works sometimes. They never share these memories with their family members, but they'll share it to me. How else have I felt? Some of these veterans I interviewed, they're public figures already. Some of them have written books before. Some of them have been interviewed before. Some of them are known for other things, just other public work.
Yeah.
So it's easy to reach out to them. Now with World War II and Korean War veterans, World War II veterans they're all born in the 20s. So most of them are around 100 years old. So they're rare to find, but when you do find one, they stick out because people are always thanking for the service and praising them and giving them special attention. Korean War veterans as well, they're getting older too. And they're called, it's sad that it was called the Forgotten War because they shouldn't have been forgotten. But you know, it was between World War II and Vietnam. And they're around the same age as World War II veterans, a little bit younger. And I'm having trouble finding more Korean War veterans and World War II veterans, surprisingly. Now, to answer your question, how do I find them? Is I just ask everyone I know. Sometimes I'll reach out to them. Sometimes I'll go to American Legions or VFWs or veteran events in general, overseas just a veteran wearing a cap, like a veteran cap.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll go up and talk to them and tell them what I do. And they're, a lot of them are impressed and happy that a young person is helping preserve their stories.
Yeah.
And that's what gets them talking and more intrigued, because instead of just like the local news reporting or just like someone doing it just for like school or college or something like that, they understand that they understand why I'm doing it and that I'm young and it's for historical reasons. And they want the youth to remember what they fought for.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep going back to this, but it's incredible to me and inspiring, the just from the perspective of, you know, you're obviously not doing this for fame. You're not doing it to make a dollar on YouTube. You're doing this to preserve those stories. And,
yeah.
And I want to just remind everybody, please go check out the YouTube page. Watch the videos, because they're first of all, so from the perspective of someone that produces and engineers video and audio, fantastic work, you know. So from the technical aspect, it's really, really good work that you've done, and I think that's amazing. But just from the perspective of the stories that you're getting to basically get out there into the ethos, so that they can always be viewed. These aren't things that will be forgotten. These individuals that you've interviewed, they won't be forgotten, because you've done them the service of getting them on, you know, recording. And I'm inspired by that. I think that's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Have any of your interviews changed the way you view history or war or military service?
Yes. A lot of the stuff I've watched, well, for example, watching movies or documentaries or learning about it when I was younger throughout school, or I don't really read books, but sometimes but back then I read the few history books I have. I just don't read books.
Yeah. I just all right. Don't. But, plenty of people on the show don't read.
Or sometimes I watch like in-depth YouTube videos about battles during World War II, or like history videos, or just other historical videos. Just hearing it from their point of view, it's different, because they didn't know it was history. They didn't know, they're living in the moment, just trying to live.
Yeah.
Make sure that they'd survive till the next day. They didn't know the outcome. They didn't know. A lot of them didn't know. I don't want to say what they're fighting for or why they're fighting, but they were just in the moment. They didn't know the context of what's happening. They didn't know if they're going to win or lose. They didn't know. They just wanted to make sure that they're going to survive until the next day, win the war, come out alive with their friends. And it was in the moment thing. And you can question, go like, oh, why didn't General Blank do this, or why didn't this unit do this? Well, they didn't know. They didn't have the knowledge at the time. You can look back on history. It's like, oh, what if this happened? Or why didn't this happen? Well, they just didn't have the knowledge. It was in the moment. Like, what would you and I do if we were in their situation? Probably exactly what they did as well.
Yeah. I'd send in drones. I think, because that's the impression I get now, is that everything is
nowadays, 80 years drones. Ago. That was,
Do you in your interviewing of veterans from World War II to the Korean War, and then on to the wars, the more recent ones with Vietnam and Afghanistan and Iraq? Do you see a difference in some of the ways that maybe their stories are told based on, you know, what technology they had or information that was available to them? Just like, you know, just like we're talking now, like, you know, World War II, I think what I see from documentaries and videos and such that I see like on the internet, it seems like the information that was provided in World War II to the soldiers on the ground, that made its way down to the soldiers on the ground, was based on, you know, spy information, or that it was in some cases it was out of a newspaper clip. Like I remember seeing a documentary where they were talking about before Normandy, that some of the British and American intelligence came from news articles that came out of German newspapers about troop movements, basically letting people know in France how to prepare for, you know, Germans coming through their town. Did you see any, do you recognize any sort of difference in the way some of the stories are told between from World War II all the way up through current wars?
Well, for the, I guess the political aspect of it, back then, there wasn't, any technology. So you didn't really like these, veterans who fought in Iraq, a lot of them questioned why they were there. Even the ones who were in Vietnam, they questioned why they were there too, even though there wasn't necessarily like modern technology during the Vietnam War. The news is covering it constantly, and there is a massive home front movement to bring the troops home. And the political aspect comparing World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans is way different. The information that World War II veterans, well, they're fighting for two different causes, but and during World War II, you know, newspapers and espionage through like double agents or radio or newsreels at the movie theater. That's the information you got. You had no other way of getting it, or you. The only information you got is from the news and your government. As time progressed, you would get independent sources or, you know, the internet as the last two conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. And yeah, for the political aspect, it's changed a lot throughout time. And for the actual fighting, yeah, it's pretty different. We're not necessarily in Iraq and Afghanistan. At least the first part of Iraq, yeah, we're fighting uniforms on uniforms, but, you know, it turned to guerrilla warfare in Afghanistan and Iraq. Same in Vietnam. Yeah, the NVA had uniforms, but the Viet Cong did not have uniforms. In Korean World War II, the enemies had uniforms. So it's, you know, it's different styles of warfare. We have guerrilla warfare and the more recent conflicts. And now, and back then, it was armies fighting armies. And, we'll use terrain, for example, which Vietnam was jungle, was mostly jungle warfare.
Yeah.
World War II was all sorts of different warfare. Iraq and Afghanistan was deserts and mountains. The way they fought was so different.
Yeah, absolutely. How do the veterans and their families typically react to seeing their stories shared through your YouTube channel?
Well, they're pretty grateful that they get a voice, and the families are even more grateful because this is the first time they ever talked about it for some of them, and probably the only time they'll ever get on recording, and especially all at once. They might hear stories throughout the years of, like one time at dinner or something like that, or they might just randomly, they never heard everything all at once. So they're very grateful that I can get it all in within 2 hours or an hour of just talking to them. And it's there forever.
Yeah.
And they're extremely grateful. So are the veterans too, because they can, so a lot of them share with their friends. Instead of, they don't have to repeat it over and over again. They can just share it out and say, this is what I did. And, they're very happy that they can share their voice, even if it was hard for them to talk about.
Yeah.
A lot of them find it therapeutic too, because there's some of them, they don't want to talk about it, which I understand completely. And there's some of them who do want to talk about it. They just don't know how to talk about it.
One of the things that I read was that you were invited to participate in the honor flight to Washington.
Yes. That was my junior year of high school.
What was that experience like?
That was amazing. I'll remember that forever. That was my junior year of high school, and I lived in upstate New York. And I was invited as a special guest on the honor flight because of all my work with veterans. And we got to see all the memorials, and the whole day was honoring these veterans and what they've done for our country.
Yeah.
Going around Washington, D.C., they really felt grateful. They really felt honored and respected. And what they fought for really meant something. So, and I was happy to be with these group of veterans for the throughout the entire day.
How did that come about? How did you wind up working your way onto that experience?
In upstate New York, I'd stay in every area and county is different how they operate honor flights. But where I used to live in Clinton County in upstate New York, they had honor flight ceremonies 4 times a year.
Okay.
And where I live now, they only have one honor flight a year. But right where I used to live, they have 4. But I would go to every single ceremony, so I got to meet the people and talk to them. And then a lot of the veterans I interviewed were going on there, or had some sort of involvement. Plus, the media attention I've gotten helped me a lot through my YouTube channel and getting on the honor flight.
Yeah.
And plus, other people pulled strings for me to get on there too. It was like, all right, let's get this kid on the honor flight. Let's get him on there. So that helped too.
it's got to be a pretty amazing experience. When we met, did I understand correctly that you also got to be in audience for the Normandy anniversary?
Yes, I was at the 80th anniversary of D-Day. I skipped my high school graduation to go there. Now here's the thing. A lot of people say, why would you do that? Well, I was only at that high school for 1 year, so I didn't really.
Yeah.
So yeah. So if this was, you know, the school I was at to before, that would have meant more. But they graduate at a different time. They graduate like a few weeks later. So I just went to see it. But my senior year of high school, I went to Asheville High School in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I skipped that to go to the anniversary D-Day. Yeah, it was sad because I didn't get to have an actual graduation, but I'd rather be at the last. This was the last major anniversary D-Day they'll probably ever have.
Yeah.
Because most of these World War II veterans are 100 years old and they do the major ones every 5 years. So there might be like a dozen of them the next time to do this. Not even maybe.
And the one we're talking about was the one that was just, what was this back? This was in 2020.
June.
It was just this past June in 2024. Yes.
Yeah.
You got to hear President Biden. Did Biden speak at that? I can't remember.
No, here's the thing. Special dignitaries were at that one, that particular speeches, and like those particular speeches and where the dignitaries were. I was not there on that day. Certain people were allowed. But I was at Gold Beach, where the British landed, if I am correct. Someone's going to fact check me on that probably.
That's
but,
okay.
If I remember correctly, that was Gold Beach where the British landed. And that's where I spent the day. And then the very next day, I went to Omaha Beach, where it was more accessible throughout anyone. Just for that, the actual day of the anniversary was packed, crowded from dignitaries from all around the world.
Yeah, one of the cool things about that, where the British actually landed, not the Americans, because Americans were at Omaha, but on the British side, one of the things that I thought was really cool was there's a program that I watch that's British television that is called Richard Hammond's Workshop. Richard Hammond, of course, for years and years was a presenter for Top Gear. And one of the things that he's done now post Top Gear, post Amazon Grand Tour, is that he has this workshop that they do a documentary about, sort of a documentary style television program for. And one of the things they do is they restore old vehicles. Well, they restored the Rolls Royce that Churchill drove on the beach.
Wow.
So after restoring that vehicle, they got to deliver the vehicle to France and then down to the beach. And then they actually got to drive the vehicle on the beach, just like Churchill did. And it was all done by the British government. They took care of all the costs and everything like that. But it was such a cool experience to watch because there were so many veterans that were there. So you may have actually been there on the day they were filming that episode.
I might without even realizing it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
But then there were some old Jeep. I can't remember exactly what the model is. My brother would shoot me if he knew. I didn't know it. But
the American Jeeps.
Yeah, the American Jeeps. But there were several American Jeeps. They got to drive around in one of those CJs.
I have never seen that much Willie Jeeps and Willys, that much.
Sherman. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I've never seen that many Willie Jeeps and that many Sherman tanks in my entire life all at once. There's probably hundreds of them, as well as dozens of World War II era aircraft flying all over the air.
Yeah.
And also, I've never seen that much. During 4th of July parades or Veterans Day events, there's American flags everywhere. I saw more American flags at Normandy than I've ever seen in my entire life.
Amazing.
That's how grateful they are for the United States and Normandy.
Yeah. I think the experiences that you have had and that you are continuing to have are just absolutely incredible. And as you continue your journey, I definitely want you to come back onto the show to talk more about it because you and I know there's things you have in the plans that I'm excited for you. What are some of the biggest challenges you've faced while working on Filmperia?
That I don't get these veterans a time. We lose hundreds of veterans every single day.
Yeah.
From all conflicts, especially the World War II and Korean War veterans are losing them the most, but we have other veterans who are just with health problems, with like Vietnam, with Agent Orange, or veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan who are killing themselves every day. So it's hard to get these people in time. There's times I'll reach out to the families and go, like, "Hey, can I interview your uncle?" They're like, "Yeah, sure. Just give me a few weeks and we can sort something out." I'll email them back in a few weeks. They go, like, "Oh, he just passed away." And this has happened multiple times, and I'm just devastated. I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." And I wish I was able to get there faster to preserve the story.
Yeah.
And there's some veterans who it's like, "Yeah, I'll do an interview," and then they're just not able to. Or it's like, "Oh, the health reasons is most of the time why they can't." And then sometimes it never happens. Sometimes it passed away. Sometimes they're just not physically able to as much as they want to. Or some of the older ones will get transferred to a nursing home, like to a different state, and I won't have access to them anymore.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest challenge, is because we lose so many of them every day, and there's dozens of veterans who I want to interview that I wasn't able to.
Yeah. Have you ever had an interview that didn't go quite as you planned?
Well, sometimes there's, when I was younger, I didn't really know what I was doing. It's when some veterans didn't really know what I was doing either, and they didn't really take me as seriously. When I first met them, they would say some exaggerated story when I first met them. And I tell them, hey, can I interview for my YouTube channel? And then they're like, oh, maybe. And then I convince them, and then I'll sit down with them. And those stories were exaggerated. That was when I was like 15, 16 years old. They thought I was like, they just didn't take me as seriously. And then yeah. When they found out what I did, they're like, oh shit, I actually have to say the actual story. That's happened a few times back then. It didn't really bother me. I found it more funny than anything. I'm like, oh, okay. But now they know what. Now I have like business cards, and I've been on the news a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I can, and they actually look through my channel now. They take me seriously. I just, even if that didn't happen, I just don't think they would do that anymore. I think that was just more because I was younger. They did that.
Yeah.
Other times too was when the fan members got information wrong, and they'll say, oh, he did this, this, and that. And then I'll talk to the veteran. They go, oh, I never did that. And I feel like an idiot. I'm like, oh, that's what your daughter or son told me. And then it's like, well, they got that wrong too. They don't know my story either. So then I get their actual story, what they did. So
yeah.
It's like some of the family members aren't as knowledgeable as you would think they are, would be about their.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I have some pretty inaccurate preconceived notions about what it, because my grandfather was in World War II on my mother's side, I have so many different stories that, you know, I have a story, there's a story of that he told that I may remember correctly, I may remember incorrectly, but that he never saw any wartime, like he never actually saw any fighting, that he was on an aircraft carrier or a ship down near Australia. And one of the stories that he talks about was anytime they crossed the international date line, anyone that had not done that before, there was something that there was a basically a hazing that would take place for whoever it was that was crossing the international date line for the first time. And then I also heard that when he was in World War II, I don't remember what point, but that he and a buddy of his that worked in the vehicle maintenance group, that he would ship parts of an old Jeep Willy back home to himself in the States. And that from that, they built a Jeep. They built a vehicle.
That's pretty cool.
That's the thing. I don't know if these stories are true. Right, it's one of those things that you collect over time. And is it his story or is it someone else's story? And
that's why firsthand accounts are always the best accounts, because they tell you how it actually happened.
Absolutely. And my grandfather passed away on December 26, 1993. So it's been
a long time
since he passed away. And he had amazing stories and he helped raise us. I wish that I had the foresight to record those things. I had not yet worked my way into me wanting to do TV and radio and podcasting wasn't even a thing back then. I did eventually work in radio, but like if I had had that foresight, I absolutely would have recorded conversations with him. And I wish that I had. What's something that you've learned about storytelling and filmmaking through this process? Like, what's something that you could say to someone else that has that sort of same drive that wants to do this as well, as far as like advice maybe?
A few things come to mind is let them talk. Just let them talk. Don't interrupt them. Just let them talk, because they're always going to have something to say. Every veteran has a different story, or every person has a different story. About their life and their experiences, and just let them talk. Just listen. Another thing too is not everyone is storytellers. I know this is a little opposite of what I just said, but not everyone is storytellers. And what I mean by that is, they'll have a good story, but they just don't know how to tell it. And sometimes you need to bear with them that it might not be what you expected, but still be respectful and still guide them into a way to make it the way you want it to be.
Yeah.
Do I have any other advice?
There's always post-production.
Do research, I guess. Do research on the person beforehand. So you know who you're talking to and what they did and who they are. So they'll take you more seriously. And so the interview and whatever you're doing, is more professional. Always do your research on these people beforehand. If you can, sometimes it's hard to look up some of these people, but there's always something about someone on the internet nowadays. It's so easy to find people now. It's like the easiest it's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what you're doing is really cool. What would you say is potentially the whole reason you're doing it? And I don't want to speak for you, but I think it has a lot to do with just recognizing the value of the veterans. But like from your perspective, like what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Is there an end game?
Well, I don't plan on stopping this. And when you kind of spoke for me there, a little part of it was preserving these stories for as long as possible and giving these veterans a voice. But also I gain out of it too, because I enjoy learning about history and hearing firsthand accounts of World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And I forgot to mention, it's not just veterans. I've had like historical witnesses on my channel too, like Holocaust survivors and victims of communism.
Yeah.
So it's important to preserve these stories for as many people as possible. What I gain out of it is I get to learn about history. I'm honored that I'm able to help these veterans share these stories and other historical witnesses talk about their experiences for sometimes the very first time.
You are currently a student. It's Cape Fear Community College, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does that tie into your goals for your future? Like, you know, your personal future, your professional goals, that sort of thing. What is you're doing there as far as preparing for what comes after college?
Well, the thing is, I try not to think about too hard about college. I'm only at a community college right now.
Trust me, most of us don't either.
And I'm getting an associate's art degree that could pretty much transfer to anything.
Sure.
And I don't know. Right now, I'm taking college day by day, but the experience just matters just as much as the degree. So hopefully I can do something as a career that's similar to what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that
I'm sorry I couldn't really answer your question there. I didn't really.
No, it's obviously it's one of those questions, like, because if somebody asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? I don't know. I fucking do this. This is kind of what I do every, I have to have a job to pay for doing this.
Right. I don't make money off of doing this. I do this for the sake of these veterans and historical witnesses.
Yeah. Has there ever been anyone that's approached you as far as saying, hey, we really like what you do. We'd really like to maybe bump this into a level that could potentially make some sort of income, or at least passively pay for what it is you're already doing? Cause this costs you money. You travel, you have to.
Well, I get a lot of opportunities out of this. I get to meet a lot of people. As you see in my wall behind me, there's a lot of, people of influence behind on my wall who I've met over the years, but I get a lot of opportunities from this, and people invite me to events or just other opportunities. Well, by the time this video is released, this will already happen. But there's this Vietnam veteran who's a Medal of Honor nominee, and I'm traveling to South Carolina with him to help him and his team out with a few things going on, and hopefully that he will get the Medal of Honor within hopefully this year. He's 87 years old. I have his poster right here, actually.
Where in South Carolina are you going to be?
Thing is, I don't know the town yet. I just know where he was born.
Okay.
I'd look back at my text messages because we're just going there for a few days, but I'm traveling with him and his team. He only lives like an hour away from me, so that's why I was able to, efficiently get this worked out.
Gotcha.
But other opportunities. In April, I'm going to Georgia to I'm one of the guest speakers for a veterans rally. So I'll be speaking there about the importance of veterans. And it's a veterans first responders rally. So I'll be talking about the importance of first responders and our veterans along with a few other guest speakers.
Yeah.
And I'll be invited to, sometimes fancy dinners or something like that, or other, not just veteran events, but just like, not just veteran events, but just other opportunities in general that will help me in the future, is meeting amazing people like all these people of influence I have on my wall over there. Yeah. I'm going to hang up a few more people who I met recently up there.
Has speaking with all these veterans, you haven't mentioned any sort of desire to be in the military. Has meeting with all these veterans?
There's a whole story. I tried joining a while ago. It didn't work out. That's a whole story for another time. And sure. I don't remember all the details, but.
But it was something you were interested
in. Yeah, it was, yes. And that was actually right, a little bit right after I got started on this. And I tried joining back in upstate New York. I tried joining a few different branches, a few different branches. It didn't work out. And I'm a little upset about it, but I don't want to say everything happens for a reason, but if I joined, I wouldn't have been able to do everything I'm doing right now.
That's what I was going to say, is the effect that you're having now is likely greater than any effect you would have had as an active military service member.
Even if I was in the reserves or anything like that, yeah. I don't think I still would have the opportunities that I have right now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know, while I certainly recognize and appreciate all of the sacrifice and that every service member has ever given and will give, you know, it's certainly the effect that you're going to have for not only future veterans, but the veterans that have already come and the ones that we've lost some that you've interviewed before. So I think it's amazing, and I'm appreciative of it, because I've had many of my family members were active military, were in war times. And, you know, like I said, I wish that I had the forethought to go and actually record some of that. Do you plan on expanding Filmperia beyond YouTube, maybe into a documentary series or a podcast?
I haven't really necessarily thought that far, but okay. Yeah, I do have plans for the future for my channel, and there's a lot of special guests who I probably will have in the future. Two of them won't come up. Who said they will do an interview eventually? Former CIA Director General Petraeus and former National Security Advisor General Flynn. They both said they would do one. Petraeus is extremely busy, and I've talked to him a few times, and he's like, Luke, I'll do one with you eventually. I have a few pages of events and other obligations I got to do first. And just build up your channel in the meantime, and I'll do an interview with you eventually.
That's very cool.
You know, Flynn said he said he'll do one. I had to go through his PR team and organize all the complicated stuff there.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
And ultimately Flynn's looking to be on television anytime he can. I know that. That's Mike Flynn. Yeah. No, he definitely served his country. I'll just move on.
Politics is, no, he's a really nice guy. Yeah. I like talking to him, and
politics aside.
I try to stay politically neutral. There's people on who are both Democrats and Republicans I'm interviewing. Yeah, I don't drag politics into this. These people serve their country and they deserve to have a voice, and I want to talk to them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, Petraeus is a Democrat, Flynn's a Republican. Why does that matter? It shouldn't.
No, you're absolutely right. It shouldn't. And ultimately I think that I don't think any service member, I think for the most part, most service members don't join the military because they have aspirations of some political life after the fact.
They do it because they love their country.
Yeah. Absolutely.
During World War II, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, they joined to defend their country. When 9/11 happened, a lot of them joined. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a huge uptick.
I'm sure you remember that. I wasn't even a thought then.
I was going to say being only 20 years old, it had happened, you know, 3 or 4 years before you were born. And that's one of those interesting topics that doesn't get to come up with a lot of our guests when it comes to the perspective of 9/11. Like, you grew up in a post 9/11 world. And I guess technically I grew up into and then after a 9/11 world. But like, I've told the story before that one of the things that I remember, because I moved to Columbia. I actually moved into my apartment 8 days before 9/11 occurred. No, I'm sorry. Nine, 10 days before 9/11 occurred. So I had lived in Columbia for about 6 months, moving back and forth between Columbia and Atlanta. And I remember the night, that Tuesday evening, we were standing outside of a pool hall where we'd go every Tuesday because they had, I don't know, it was half price drinks or something like that. And I remember standing outside and looking up at the sky and not seeing a single plane in the sky, and just that odd silence. That
sounds really eerie.
Yeah, it was weird. And then out of nowhere, you'd have two two fighter groups of F-18s come flying through the skies because they were flying up and down the coast monitoring for any potential other attacks. And it was like that for probably, I want to say it was like that for maybe 2 weeks or so. But even from the perspective of friends that were active military at that time, I had a friend who was, I can't give too much information about it, but I can say that the stories he told me, he was the night after 9/11. So on 9/12, he and his unit were immediately deployed to Afghanistan.
Wow.
Where within 2 days, they had over, this is his story, so I may be inaccurate, but within two That's days, okay. they had taken over the Kabul the airport, the main capital airport, basically so the United States could begin using the airport for flights in, because when 9/11 happened, he was active military. He was wherever it was that he was at. And they were activated within an hour of the first plane hitting. And they were on their way somewhere. They didn't know where they were on their way to. Information was still coming in, but they were on a plane on their way. And so those are the kind of, and he lives in Wilmington. I could potentially get you in touch with him if that.
Yeah, please do. Yeah,
I will reach out to him and see if that's something I can get. But
appreciate that.
He's an amazing storyteller. I'll get you that information. He's really good.
Thank you.
Have you had anyone after, you obviously have a decent number of subscribers, your videos get a fair amount of views. Have you had anyone approach you and ask you for advice on how you do the filmmaking that you do, how you approach and ask and interview these people? Has it brought you any sort of fame that you've been recognized for? I mean, obviously you've been to awards, you've been to dinners and you've met with people and things like that, but anything that stands out is
the question of, have people asked for advice? Some people have asked me, how do you find these people? And, they're more referring to the public figures, people, the ones who are, more known, they have a big influence, and, people have asked, how do you get in touch with them? I just ask them, I'll just email them and tell them what I do. And the worst they can say is no or not respond. And that happens a lot. You're going to get no a lot from these people, which I understand why. Why would you want to talk about the worst days of your life? I understand that. But some of them, they know why. They understand for historical reasons. But people have asked, how do you get in touch with these people? My advice is reach out to them. The worst they're going to do is not respond because they're so busy or they won't see it. Or they'll say no. And just reach out to them. Really, they'll be like, let's say I have there's 10 veterans I've reached out to. Two of them respond, and one of them agrees. The other one says no, but I appreciate what you're doing. The other one says yes, I'll do it. So you're gonna get rejection a lot and a lot of no's, but there's gonna be that small amount of yes and agreement. And just my advice, as I said, I keep on repeating, just don't be afraid to reach out.
Yeah. If you could interview any historical figures, do you have a list in your head of the historical figures you'd like to that you would have potentially liked to interview from any war? Trojan.
Okay, well, there's two people who are alive who I do want to interview, which I know I want to be able to just because of, there's two people who I would have had a realistic chance to interview just through connections and all of that, but their mental and physical capabilities aren't, they're not public, and they're not doing interviews anymore for private reasons. One of them is General Kalugin. He's a former KGB general who, he lives in the United States now after the Soviet Union fell. I would love to interview him. He doesn't do interviews anymore, sadly. Another person is Imelda Marcos. She's the former first lady of the Philippines. And that's more political history, but I've talked to privately my connection there. She's just inaccessible now, just completely inaccessible. I guess it'd be a group of people. Obviously, I interviewed a lot of allied veterans. I do want to hear the other side. If I can find a German or Japanese veteran, I would love to interview them. I'm sure that's, I know that's harder to find. They're almost impossible to. World War II veterans alone are hard enough to find. Finding a German or Japanese veteran who, they've been shamed for what they've done, and they're on the losing side, and they're, the bad guys. They don't really want to talk about it. But the ones who have been interviewed, I've seen online, they understand for historic reasons, and they're just there. A lot of them are just forced to do it. But my point is, I want to hear the other side too.
Yeah.
I've talked to very few people who are on the opposing side. Someone else I interviewed who was on who used to be our pardon me, is former KGB agent Jack Barsky, who's he's on our side now, don't worry, but
what is our side? I can't pinpoint what our side is currently. So, you know, I honestly look at it this way, that you know, for every war there are millions of individual stories.
Yes.
And those,
and it's history. It actually have, it doesn't matter who's good or bad.
Right.
I want to hear all sides of history. And, yes, I do. I wanted to interview, like I said, German, Japanese, or, even the Soviets on our side, they have a completely different point of view of World War II. I don't know any Soviet World War II veterans. I don't know any German or, oh, I met a Hitler Youth member, former Hitler Youth member. She passed away though. And, she wasn't with them enough to do a video, an interview for my channel, but I would still talk to her occasionally when I'd see her. She was still with them enough to understand what was going on there, but I didn't want to put a camera in front of her face when she was already confused enough. But
sure. That's amazing though.
Yeah.
It's incredible to look back, because you mentioned Hitler Youth.
And remember, it wasn't her fault. You got to understand. Sure, people got to understand. This wasn't her fault. She was, about 8 years old. Her father was a German police officer, and she was indoctrinated to believe in the Third Reich.
Yeah.
This wasn't her fault. These people were brainwashed. The people who were around my age. I'm not saying there's a lot of bad Germans out there and Nazis out there, but you know, there's still a lot of them out there who were, you know, forced to do this, or they're brainwashed completely. And it's history. It actually happened. It's important that we understand both sides of history.
Yeah. No, I think that's one of the things about history, is if you don't know what happened in history, you're doomed to repeat the same thing. I mean, we have, you know, there are people in this there are people on this planet that are brainwashed now to believe what isn't true in order to push their agenda. Yeah,
we need to understand. I'll say, the United States, we've done countless of horrible acts throughout history.
Yeah.
But it's important that we are aware of that. We need to know what actually happened. It can't just be a one-sided thing. History is violent, and a lot of times both sides can be just as bad as another.
Yeah.
Not always, but you know, there's times where, you know, it can just be bad guys versus bad guys. It's not always good guys versus bad guys.
Yeah. Outside of journalism and filmmaking, what are some of your other personal interests and hobbies?
I have a list of things I'm doing on my schedule. So, I have a lot of things going on, a lot of things, but I enjoy them, even though college is the one thing that's slowing me down. I still make it.
Don't come to me for any advice about college. I am still not a graduate after, nearly how 46. So after 26 years, I'm still not a graduate. So, you know,
that's okay. College isn't for everyone.
That is correct. That is correct. And as long as college is expensive as it is, it shouldn't be for everyone.
Yeah. There's a lot of things you can do without college. It just, for certain people, like what I'm, not just for me, just like if you want to be a doctor or lawyer, you need college. For me, a degree is going to make me look a lot better, and I'm still going to get experience from there, even though I already have the experience from outside of college and other aspects. But the degree will make me look better. I'm still going to go to college regardless. I'm too invested into it to pull out right now.
So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. I think one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, and this is not, for me, this isn't a political topic, but it is something I think that is important. It's something that I have dredged on about for years, is you mentioned the homeless situation, the lack of, you know, when it comes to veterans and things like, or I guess one of the things that I think that from the perspective of being in the United States being the richest country on the planet, that if you could focus in on any one specific issue for veterans, what would that be for you?
Well, there's a lot of issues they suffer from, PTSD to homelessness to drugs, alcohol, as well as physical, mental issues, what they've gotten from their service, their years of service. So that's a hard question to answer, because when the veterans transitioning from military to civilian life, they're two different worlds completely. And that's a hard question to answer if you're making me choose to pick one between all those aspects that are affecting them every single day. That's hard, because they all should be fixed, which is, you know, that's not possible, but these veterans have done so much for our country, and then they come home to having daily struggles of having nightmares, remembering their best friend dying right in front of them, or having Agent Orange from Vietnam, or some of them will have still metal in their bodies from like a grenade going off.
Yeah. Overall, just veteran health and recognition. I think it sounds like that's something that's important to you.
Yeah, it is.
There's so many different battles to fight for our veterans. And I am absolutely one of the people that stands up and says that our country should do right by the people that have given that sacrifice, that have sacrificed their minds, their body, their souls to stand up.
Every day they didn't know if they're going to come back or not.
Yeah.
And that was for the entire time in the military, for those X amount of time they served. They didn't know if they're going to come back home or not. Every day was different, and what these veterans have done, and a lot of people just can't put into perspective of we owe them almost pretty much everything. Like, our country is free because of these people, and we live in one of the greatest countries, probably the greatest country in the world. So I appreciate what these veterans have done for us. Our way of life would have been so much different if we didn't have these people defending us.
Yeah. Are there any organizations that you've worked with specifically that you think that could use more attention as far as their support of veterans?
Well, I want people to look into the. I'm going to be a little biased to say the Honor
Flight.
Please do. But I really look into the Honor Flight. I just written a bunch of letters to the one in my area. So when the veterans are on the plane, they'll have some letters to read when they either get back home or when they're on their way over there. VFW is American Legions. They're pretty much every area in the United States, and just going there and see if you want to help out or see what you can do, go for it. If you want to help our veterans, or there's organizations online that will take volunteers, or just spreading awareness is the best way to do it, or just understanding what these veterans have done for, and going up to them and thanking them for their service. And if it's a Vietnam veteran, also say welcome home, because they didn't get a welcome home.
Yeah, that's. Luke, like I said, I think that what you're doing is inspiring, and I thoroughly enjoy all of the videos that I've watched so far. And I guarantee you by the next time we talk, I absolutely will have watched all of them.
Wow.
you've got a good number out there. There's several, but
well, there's a lot, but the problem is there's a lot more I haven't had a chance to upload.
Yeah.
I have some other ones from like over a year ago. I just haven't able to get to. There's a lot of older guys that try to prioritize first just because of their age, and some of the younger ones I just haven't got to yet, as much as I want to get to them. It's just a lot at once, and I'm gonna have videos to edit for years.
Yeah.
Let's say for some reason I stop this, I'm gonna have so much videos just unedited.
There's a lot of content to come.
I plan on doing this for as long as possible.
Well, it's an amazing service, not only for us as the individuals that get to view and watch what you've put together, but the service that you've done for these individuals and their families and friends and the people that they served with. You know, these are stories that are going to live on forever now because they're on the internet. And I think that what you've done is amazing, and I look forward to everything that you've done. Is there anything else you want to tell us about before we wrap this up?
Well, if anyone listening knows any veterans, or if you are a veteran, you want to reach out and talk to me, or even do an interview over Zoom, or if you, I don't know how many people who live in North or South Carolina are watching this, but if you live within the state, we can maybe arrange one in person. Or if you just want to talk to me, send me an email at lukeb.filmperia@gmail.com. Filmperia is the name of my channel too, if you just want to contact me through there. But I appreciate all the support for everyone who's watching videos, and I appreciate that you allowed me to talk on your podcast.
Yeah, no, and I'll put all your information in the show notes, and I'll get information on there on how they can contact you, your email address and everything like that, because I think that the potential is you'll have several people reaching out just purely to tell their stories. And I think that that'd be really awesome. Just if you're watching, just understand if there might be a little bit of a delay because he's got a fairly decent backlog of stories to come. But Luke, it's absolutely been an honor to have you on the show. I wish that Zach could have been here. Because
we think you'll be here next time.
I hope so. Fingers crossed. I can't fingers crossed, but it you know, his situation has definitely changed with the inclusion of two new children. But you know, like I said, we thoroughly enjoyed meeting you at the Comic Con, and I had your card sitting on my it was when you emailed me a couple weeks ago. Like, I literally had your card sitting here so wow. that I could get a hold of you. So you were not forgotten. You definitely left an impact on us just from the conversation. So like I said, look, all of the rest of your endeavors to come here in the next few weeks to months, I want you to be super careful, because I know that there's danger everywhere. And you know, where if you have a press badge, wear that press badge big, and you know, glitter it up if you have to, make it stand out. So look, Luke Basso, I really appreciate you coming on the show with us. Just to remind everybody that Luke's YouTube channel is Filmperia. You can find the link in our show notes. Please go subscribe and watch these videos, listen to these stories. The combination of the individuals that he's interviewed, as well as the accompaniment of news reels and things like that from the wars, it's done very, very well. The quality is amazing. So from that perspective is one of the things that I also respect, not just the work you've done, but the content as well. So Luke, thank you very much again for being on the show. Again, everybody check the show notes and go subscribe to Luke's page, because it's incredible information. It's inspiring. That's the word I keep coming back to, is inspiring. Thank you very much, Luke.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to wrap it up for episode number 248. Thank you again, Luke, for being on the show with me. Links to past episodes, podcast platforms, merchandise, and social media are available at our website, theallaboutnothing.com. And if you think our financial model of giving away free content and entertainment is silly and you're in the giving mood, why not become an official Nothinger and support the show? Members get early access to this episode as well as exclusive content. Visit members.theallaboutnothing.com, or you can find a link on our webpage. You can also give us a one-time donation through the same link. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can call and leave us a message, 803-672-0533, or you can email theshow@theallaboutnothing.com. You can join our Discord server as well. Links found on our website. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You all stay safe, be kind, and keep your hands to yourself. The All About Nothing podcast is a product of Big Media and produced and engineered by me, Barrett Gruber. Thanks to Cake for our intro music, Sick of You. You can follow everything Cake the band at cakemusic.com. Thanks to Muff the producer for our outro music. You can follow Muff on Instagram at Muff the producer. You can follow me across social media by visiting linktree.com/Barrett Gruber. And you can follow Zach King on linktree.com/AANZach. Want to support the show? Visit our webpage, theallaboutnothing.com. And become a member. There are several tiers available that give you early access to episodes as well as exclusive content. To find links to our social media, podcast platforms, and merchandise to support the show, as well as past episodes, visit theallaboutnothing.com. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can email theshow@theallaboutnothing.com, or you can call our number and leave a message. Dial 803-672-0533. If the time between these episodes is more than you can handle, check out our sister shows. What the Pod Was That with Carrie, Zach, and myself. Welcome to Wonderland with me. Politically Speaking with Erica, Kirsten, and Emily. And Black, White, and Blue in the South with Dr. Jamil Brooks and Bill Kimmler. Please subscribe and share this show. If you're on YouTube, please subscribe and punch that notification bell. Thank you for listening, and hear us next week. The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media, LLC, and is copyright 2025, all rights reserved.